Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Ambassador Kalim, Excellencies, guests, distinguished people present here, ladies and gentlemen. So good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure, really, to be here today to open the seminar. Apologize for being a little bit late. The day has been and will continue to be a bit hectic. But this is a very important event. I wanted to be here. At the end of the day, 80% of the global trade is supported by some form of financing or credit insurance. And despite that, in many countries, there is a lack of capacity in the financial sector to support trade, and also a lack of access to the international system, the international financial system. So their ability or the ability of these countries to use even simple instruments such as letters of credit is very, very limited. And the impact of these limitations on a country's trading potential can be very, very significant. The aim of this event is therefore to improve our understanding of the challenges in obtaining trade financing at affordable prices, affordable rates, particularly in developing countries, and of course to consider some potential solutions. So over the course of this afternoon and tomorrow morning, you will have the chance to explore and discuss this very important topic. And we will hear from a range of different voices, I'm sure. Along with WTO members and some delegations from capitals, we are also joined today by representatives from the private sector, from other international organizations, and from regulatory bodies. So I think we have the opportunity for a very good discussion. This working group, the Working Group on Trade, Debt, and Finance, has been in place for over 10 years. The same applies to the expert group of high-level trade finance practitioners, which reports to me and to the working group. And the expert group met this morning, that's my understanding, to give their insights and to help us understand that they are seeing what they are seeing on the ground. And I think that most of the members of that group are here this afternoon, and I thank them for this commitment. I think that this cooperative, inter-institutional approach has yielded some very concrete results. For example, we have been pleased to work with multilateral development banks to support the creation and the expansion of various trade finance facilitation programs. These programs provide payment guarantees for small trade transactions for SMEs in countries where local banks find it difficult to receive confirmation from large global bank partners. The programs, therefore, act to reduce the risk or the perception of risk of trading in those countries. So, and they enable thousands of small trade transactions to take place each year, almost exclusively in poor countries, thereby supporting around $30 billion of trade. And they are also a useful counter-cyclical tool during the financial crisis, and significantly they do not cost taxpayers a single cent. In recent years, these programs have spread from the EBRD, the European Bank of Reconstruction and Development, to all multilateral development banks to form a global network facilitating trade finance. And I think that there are other useful initiatives which have received inputs from our work here. For example, our dialogue with the Basel Committee on Banking Supervision helped to establish fair and reasonable prudential treatment for trade finance in developing countries. In addition, we are helping build capacity on trade finance through our e-learning program and through our participation in the creation of a new trade finance academy by the International Chamber of Commerce. So I think we're engaged in a very positive way, But of course, as always, there is still a lot to do. After the financial crisis, the supply of trade finance has largely returned to normal levels in the major markets, but not, and this is important, but not everywhere and not for everyone. And the structural difficulties of poor countries in accessing trade finance have not disappeared. Indeed, the situation may well have declined due to the effects of the crisis. So there are indications that markets are even more selective now than they were before. Under increased regulatory scrutiny, many institutions have lowered their risk appetite and are focusing more on their established customers. Some are deliberately decreasing their number of clients in a so-called flight to quality. So in this environment, the lower end of the market has been struggling to obtain affordable finance, with the smaller companies in the smaller, less developed countries being affected the most. And members asked us to provide more evidence of this phenomenon last year. And the Secretariat document WT/WGTDF/74, which was published in November of last year and updated in February last, provides precisely this evidence. And the document is available in the room today, and you will see that evidence compiled there points to this situation. It is from a range of sources, the document, but it converges towards the same message. And I was particularly struck by the fact that the financing gaps are the highest in the poorest countries, notably in Africa and in Asia. And I was struck by the size of the gaps. So a survey by the African Development Bank of 300 banks operating in 45 African countries found that the market for trade finance was somewhere between $330 and $350 billion. Now, it also found that this could be markedly higher if a significant share of the financing requested by traders had not been rejected. So the mere fact of rejecting already brings that number down. But even then, based on those rejections, the estimate, so it would be a conservative estimate for the value of unmet demand for trade finance in Africa, is between $110 and $120 billion. So this gap represents one-third of the existing market. Now, the main reasons for the rejection of the requests for financing were, and there's a small list, but these are the main important points, the lack, of course, the first one is the lack of credit worthiness or poor credit history of the client, the insufficient limits granted by endorsing banks to local African issuing banks, the small size of the balance sheets of the African banks, and insufficient U.S. dollar liquidity. And some of these constraints are, of course, structural and can only be addressed in a medium to long-term perspective. The retreat of global banks from Africa and from other poor countries is one of these structural problems that we see there. Now, the Asian Development Bank conducted also a similar survey in Asia, looking at countries like Vietnam, Cambodia, Bangladesh, Pakistan, India. And again, according to a preliminary estimate, the unmet demand in Asia is around $800 billion. So small and medium-sized enterprises are the most credit-constrained, as 50% of their requests for trade finance are estimated to be rejected. So one in every two. And this is compared to just 7% for multinational corporations. So other than that, in addition to that, two-thirds of the companies surveyed reported that they did not seek alternatives for rejected transactions. So these gaps may be exacerbated by the lack of awareness and familiarity of companies, particularly the smaller ones, about the many options that exist. So once they are rejected, they don't try anymore. They just stop. A large majority of firms stated that they would benefit from greater financial education. Now, these findings are particularly striking as Africa and developing Asia are two areas of the world in which trade has grown the fastest in the past decade. But the potential evolution of new production networks is faster than the ability of the local financial sector to support them. In this way, the lack of development of the financial sector can be a very significant barrier to trade. It can prevent developing countries from integrating into the trading system and accessing further trade opportunities. And it can therefore prevent them from leveraging trade as a powerful source of development. So we need to respond to this problem. The exchanges that we have here in this setting and can, in my view, be a very important part of this response. We need to join together in order to advocate action in this area and to devise practical solutions. Of course, there is no magic bullet. This is a complex issue. However, that should not discourage our efforts. The trade finance facilitation programs that I outlined earlier are one clear example of practical action that we can take. Of course, this only fills part of the gap, so our response needs to be more fundamental than that. In July this year, the UN's major financing for development conference will take place in Addis Ababa. And I think it's essential that we put trade finance on the agenda of this conference. In this way, we can ensure that this issue is given its proper prominence in the development debate, especially at a time when all important UN sustainable development goals are being finalized. So at the WTO, we are doing everything we can to help developing countries to integrate into the global trading system. And this is clearly reflected in our technical assistance work. It is reflected in the outcomes of the Bali package, which we're implementing now. And it is reflected in the current negotiations on the work program to conclude the Doha round. But the effectiveness of all this work will be lessened if proper access to trade finance is not secured. So I wish all of you every success in the deliberations here. I will be following your work very, very closely. Let's redouble our efforts to work together and to resolve this problem. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, everyone. And good work.